let's go back to that day 20 years ago, 91. I mean, you're you know, the executive director of Players Association, and you get word of this that, you know, Magic is going to announce his retirement. And as we were saying, there's no live streaming to hear the news conference. That you had to be there. Cell phones weren't nearly as kind of prevalent as they are now. When did you hear, and what was that day like for you, Charles?
Well, I heard sort of right away once the exam was taken and failed. I was notified right away, and clearly, I think I've always cited this in my class as being probably the most difficult negotiation we've had, because we now had to negotiate with a public who was uninformed, uneducated, and clearly had mixed reviews as to how the NBA would treat such an issue. But I also felt that while we had to certainly care for someone like Irvin, but we also had to be concerned about the 395 other players in the league. And that was something new, something different, but something that really presented a big obstacle for us. And so my immediate interest was to get the top medical people we could possibly find in the United States to kind of come in and help us design a program and a policy that would be suitable. Not an easy task at the time, but, you know, clearly you had to deal with it.
What was the initial reaction from the majority of the 395? Because we had Muggsy Bogues on earlier, and Charles, I was saying that I can't imagine that most athletes, including most people in society, and I throw myself into that mix as well. I was 16 at the time that it went down. The general feeling was that most people that had HIV or AIDS were either homosexuals or drug users. That was the mentality or the feeling from a lot of those those that were educated in society. That was the uneducated, ignorant view, because we simply didn't know. And as much as it was a discussion and a topic and a story, it was something that a lot of us probably didn't have enough information on as much as we should have. And Magic was essentially a trailblazer in coming out the way he did.
You're absolutely correct. And he was sort of a pariah. I mean, everybody wanted to stay away. We had players who felt that if they played with Irvin or had played with him, that the sweat that may have come off his body onto theirs, that they may be affected. I mean, it was all kinds of reactions. And then, of course, you had the wives in the league who were concerned about the activity of their husbands and boyfriends. And so you really had a combination of issues that you had to struggle with. The medical staff at Johns Hopkins turned out to be just superb, because they were able to guide us in a direction that said, look, there's a lot of unfounded rumors and unsubstantiated opinions that we're going to have to deal with right away. So immediately we embarked upon meetings with all the players, meetings with their wives and family, and tried to sort of settle the whole membership to the point that they would feel comfortable going forward. From that point on, it was a continued exploration of ways in which we could comfort not only our players, but the public and the fans about NBA basketball. And as you say, as a trailblazer for a policy that would affect work environments throughout the world.
Charles, still though, moving forward, did you get a feel for the prevailing kind of sentiment of the members of all the other players? I mean, even though they were assured and some of the myths and stereotypes were broken, but still the reality going forward, what were most of the players feeling? Because I know some of them, as you said, you know, like a Karl Malone came out.
Sure. I mean, if you guys remember, Magic came back, played an All-Star game, and from that point on, it was the Olympics was the next thing, and then it was Irvin with a wish to come back and play. And we had several players who were outspoken to say they didn't wish to play against him at the time. And so those are all issues at the time that we clearly had to deal with. And fortunately, over time, they all kind of worked their way out. But, and I'm sure, as Irvin would say today, that at a certain point, he wished he had hung in there and continued to play when he tried to make a comeback.
Speaking with Charles Grantham, former executive director of the NBA Players Association. Charles, when those are speaking out or at least questioning and simply, again, not maybe educated enough to know what the real inherent risks were and come to find out there weren't obviously a ton, how do you deal with that as an association? Because we talk about this all the time when maybe there's a fight in a sport or when there's an incident involving two players. On one hand, you are, and you said earlier, you're trying to protect the interests and the well-being of one player who you represent, but at the same time, you're trying to protect the interests of the remainder of the union as well. So you're still representing both people, both sides, while there may be a clear right or wrong that is going to impact both sides.
Well, what you got to realize is it's called balance, okay? And while, you know, Irvin, of course, was a good friend, it's a balancing situation where you have to explain to him and his constituents, as well as the rest of the people, that we have to come up with a solution. That's not a bias, but we have to come up with a solution. And we have to start with a medical solution. And from that point on, we had to make sure that people were well-informed. Everyone is, you know, what you find out is you have 400 different families. Everyone's not going to necessarily believe what the doctors say.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have to take a more aggressive leadership approach, even if it gets to a point of one-on-one. I had to have conversations with Carl Malone. I had to have conversations with people who wouldn't buy our program. I had to talk to the wives who were concerned about the infidelity of their spouses and their partners. So you had to really get out and, A, find out what the information was, what were the solutions at the time, and you had to select one and go with it. And so it was not only the players, but it was also David Stern, the commissioner's office. We all had to sit at the table together and say, this is not a player problem or a management problem. This is a problem that's facing the game and the industry and the business. And how do we go about resolving this thing?
Charles, talk to me about the genesis of some of the rules, like the rules in the game. I mean, we still see it now. A player gets cut and, you know, you have the infection control room. We know that, you know, the Raptors travel with an extra set of jerseys in case there's blood on a jersey, all those kinds of things. Talk to us about where those things started and the discussions around getting those policies implemented, because I'm sure you had resistance there as well.
Well, they started again with the team of medical experts from Johns Hopkins University out of Baltimore. And we literally had to go through a program approach from the player side, from the game side, you know, what has to happen going forward if, in fact, we find blood on a player, or if we have an accident, you know, what control do we have to have with them? And look, that took months, but it was something we had to do very quickly, and you know, sort of had to learn on the fly, because the season was upon us and we had games that were starting right away. So over time, these things have become more refined. It's now part of just the normal procedure of any NBA game in any one of the NBA cities, and now we take that for granted. But at a certain time, these are sort of new frontiers. These are sort of experimentation. These are things that we said, okay, what makes common sense? And a lot of it was exploring different techniques. But now they are part of what we consider putting on part of the operation of an NBA game. So, you know, we're pioneers on the one hand, but we had to be. It was not an issue of us sitting down and having time to plan these things. We had to be reactionary, but at the same time, we had to be sort of visionary, and at the same time, we were also experimental. And we were sort of fortunate that I think the factors and the number of people that we had helping us turned out to be a solid team.
Charles, we really appreciate the time of the program today. Thanks for joining us for the second time in a few days, and obviously under much different circumstances. And as I joked off the top, we could probably have you back again in 2 days because looks like
they're. You know, it's funny because I was just I was recalling our conversation last week, and I remember you asking me, I must be sitting down smiling. And, you know, it's interesting. I thought about that. So, you know, actually, I'm not, because I'm on the one hand embarrassed. And on the other hand, I feel that this is just a confrontation that is unnecessary. And as I look at the business of professional basketball, sort of like the Irving Johnson issue, at times there are things that approach your business that become bigger than your position. And it's at that time that the parties have to come together and resolve it from a problem-solving position, as opposed to who wins and who loses. And we're at that point again. And now this is when it takes some creative leadership. It can't be I win and you lose. And once we get to that position of someone having to win and someone has to lose, that's when disaster happens.
Charles,
we're certainly approaching that.